This episode of Nerd and Tie is sponsored by Ohio Kimono. Ohio Kimono offers authentic Japanese kimonos since 2009 and imports them directly from Kyoto, Japan. You can find more information at ohiokimono.com.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, we mourn the passing of Adam West. You look back at what he created off. The intake updates Pokemon Go. The Venom State Connect MCU. Wizard World is having money problems. And of course, the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. This is Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
This is it, guys. We're here.
And eventually, I'll even put us on screen. The secret is right now, slowly the frame rate slows to a crawl, and we're just going to have to deal with it, is that I say who we are, Nick, and then I'll tell why.
Yeah. Issues. All right. This is successfully announcing what's going on. I am, of course, Nick Izumi, wanting to explain the computer troubles is, of course, the magnanimous Trey Dorn.
I am a person.
And smiling and ready to roll is the insurmountable Genprock.
Sup.
Together we are Nerd and Ty.
Yeah, so people who may be witnessing technical issues with the show tonight, audio listeners are going to get the full experience. That's not a problem. But I am in the process of moving the studio, hence the really boring title card for this episode. And I am currently, this is the last episode that's going to be recorded in Indiana. That's going to be produced out of the Indiana office, which is why the background looks different for me on the video version, even though I'm in the same spot that I normally sit when I record, although usually rotated. Because the normal accoutrements behind me are about 500 miles away from me in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. So I had to remove all the furniture that the studio was set up on, but leave the studio here because, there's an internet connection still in Lafayette, and we haven't set it up yet in Eau Claire, where the next time you see me in an episode of Nerd and Tie, I'm going to be recording from. So, yeah, it's fun and exciting, and it is a massive, massive pain in the ass.
I know that feeling. I hate moving. I always hate moving.
It sucks.
Yeah, so that's, and of course, for some reason, my frame rate, I look like I'm using a webcam from, 2003.
Ouch.
It started to rain on my apartment.
That's exciting. But, Nick, why don't you take us into our first story?
Yeah, we are going from one kind of sad thing to another really sad thing. Just a week ago on, a week from yesterday, that is, last Sunday, we received word that the original TV Batman, truly one of the greats, Adam West, passed away. After a brief fight with leukemia, came as a shock to pretty much everyone. Real bummer, of course. Again, Adam West, best known for his portrayal as Batman in the 66 TV show, one of the funniest TV shows ever made, thanks in no small part to West's completely dry and serious read in the face of a completely ridiculous show. Obviously, he will be missed.
Yeah.
I don't know, the weird thing about this passing, though, and I gotta bring this up, is that sometimes I get really teary or sad when people go. And when Adam West died, I was shocked.
Yeah.
But I wasn't
You know what I did? I got up. I was told Adam West died. I wrote the obituary for the website. And then I watched the 67 Batman movie. And you know what?
Yeah.
I laughed. I laughed through the whole thing. And I feel like that's the way Adam West would want to be remembered.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, someone who made people happy.
Well, he's my childhood Batman. It's, mm-hmm. You know, I was born in 1980, and while, you know, obviously the 60s series, you know, had been off, like, was obviously not running when I was a child, it was in reruns constantly throughout my childhood. And, like, I'd watched, you know, like, 4 to 6 episodes of that thing a day. But he was also, like, as a kid, he was also the voice of Batman in every cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was he was my Batman as a child. And so, like, he was the definitive version of the character. Like, when I dressed up as Batman for Halloween in the super, like, powers, like, costume, like, in my mind, I was dressing up as Adam West, you know?
Right.
It's... Yeah. It's just so sad. Like, it... He's such a, like... And also, like, he was still doing stuff. Like, they have, the Batman versus Two-Face, animated movie that is still coming out because he'd already recorded all his lines for it.
Recording the lines for that, yeah.
But like, and he's still been making convention appearances and like he's been actively like, you know, doing stuff. So it's a shock that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like just absolutely gutting.
And he seemed in such good form too. That long ago now, but when the animated movie Return of the Caped Crusaders came out, I was really excited for that because that had Burt Ward and Adam West reprising their roles, and it was just kind of an animated take on the '60s show. It was a whole lot of fun, and West and Ward didn't sound any different from the way they did back in the original show.
No, they didn't.
They sounded exactly the same. It just made the movie even all the more charming. It's so weird.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was 88, so I guess desperate for a bright side in any of this, at least he lived a long life.
Well, it's also, I don't think anybody really knew that he had leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really wasn't something that people knew about. So,
well, and sources close to him keep using the phrase short battle with, so it might have been just kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, he might not have known he had it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Adam West.
Like,
he was a dude.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Adam West. You were the best. You were my childhood Batman's childhood Batman. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, go to the Batman the Animated Series and watch the season 1 episode Return of the Grey Ghost.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That was a fantastic episode. That...
Mm-hmm.
Because that's right. He voiced the... He played the character who... He played the actor who played the Grey Ghost.
Mm-hmm. Who was the character who inspired... Bruce Wayne to become a crime fighter in the first place. So, yeah, think about that. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
I am gastroflabbed. I really am. I don't know. I'm just trying to remember Adam West the way that I think he'd want to be remembered, as someone who made people happy. And he definitely made me happy. Mm-hmm. I can say that much.
Yeah. Adam West.
Not much, but yeah. Rest in peace, Batman. Wow, what a downer. There's got to be something happy going on in the world. Gen, do you know anything happy?
Well, mostly happy. Mostly happy. Last week, the video game world kind of exploded when E3 2017 happened. If you don't know, E3 stands for the Electronic Entertainment Expo, which happens every year, so that video game companies can announce the brand new systems and games that will be coming out this year, next year, future years, things we're very like excited about.
If you're a listener of this show and you were unaware of that, welcome to your first geeky thing, I guess.
I guess.
Welcome to
we have snacks.
Like, video gamey, big video game thing. So I sat down and watched every single conference, wrote up little thingies about every single conference, and I am here to give you your little tidbits of what the big things that happened were. So all the big game companies do conferences announcing their stuff. The first one last week was E3, and it was okay. I mean, new sports games. And I know there are lots of people who love sports games. I'm not one of them. So,
but there are always new sports games.
There's always new sports games, and we're never surprised by new sports games.
I will amend that statement.
What?
If someone comes up with a competitive croquet simulator, like a croquet game, like video game, then I will be surprised.
I'd say the closest thing right now would be like Rocket League, maybe.
Oh, Rocket League is fun.
Yeah, Rocket League is soccer but with cars, and that's really great.
But that's not croquet.
No, not technically.
Professional, but... competitive, croquet, except nothing less.
Well. What did come out, what I was excited for from EA was their new game called A Way Out, which is a couch co-op split-screen game about a prison break.
Ooh.
Where, like, it's, like, yeah, it's, like, crazy. You each play one character, and, like, it's a split-screen. So, like, you see yourself on one side, and your partner is on the other side, and you're going around, like, the prison, like, helping each other get out, and it can go different ways depending on which character does what thing. So
okay.
that was the big neat thing that I saw from EA. And then Microsoft had their conference, and of course it was a big technical show. Oh, look at all these numbers. They announced that they have the new console coming out.
Oh, geez.
They had previously called it Project Scorpio as kind of like a code name. But the new console is the Xbox One X. Not to be confused with the Xbox One S. Great job naming, people. But the Xbox One X is going to be the most powerful system ever. It's going to be the most gorgeous system ever. Everything's going to play in 4K, 4K. Ah! They announced, like, so many games. They just, like, wow. They, like, I'm pretty sure the announcer guy said they had, like, 42, like, titles.
Yeesh.
And
wow.
Like, so I'm not going to go through, like, all of them. Some of the bigger ones is that, like, there's a new Assassin's Creed game, which is the origin story, which is pretty neat. Takes place in Egypt, so that's really cool. There's actually a lot of indie games that they announced that was really cool. Sea of Thieves, Super Lucky Tale, Cuphead. I'm really personally excited for Cuphead. It's based off of like really, really old animation. Like the early stuff. It is so cool. Yeah, there's just like a ton of stuff. Bethesda did their press conference and not much new there. They have Doom and Fallout 4 coming to VR. So the weird thing about this E3 was that there was so much Skyrim. There was
Skyrim
so much
everywhere.
Skyrim stuff. Like, this game is 6 years old. Why? Why? Like, Skyrim is getting, like, a special modding thing where you can buy official mods for it. Ooh, there's the card game video game is getting a Skyrim expansion. Ooh, Skyrim is coming to the Switch. Ooh. cool, neat, what's new? Like,
that is really weird.
Yeah.
That is like
they're so gung-ho about frickin' Skyrim, like, and none of us are, like, really that excited?
Well, I think the idea that, you know, that you'd be able to play it, like, with the Switch version, that you could play it.
Yeah.
Or carrying around, and the VR version.
Skyrim on the go.
Yeah, and, like, VR is really cool.
And to be fair, the Nintendo players haven't gotten to play it yet.
Yeah. That's true. But the only new games announced from Bethesda this year are The Evil Within 2 and Wolfenstein 2. Wolfenstein 2 looks really, really good.
Like, Wolfenstein 2 looks awesome.
It looks so good. I'm really excited to see this thing.
I'm still kicking myself for not picking up New Order yet, because that looked really good, too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to keep rolling through these, because, like, I wrote much about
them. Do it. We want to hear it. And I'm and video viewers are looking at the title card because I'm going to try to fix the video problems with hardware.
Have fun while I talk about Ubisoft. Ubisoft, did a big, like, crazy production as usual. Lots of lights and flashy things and, like, craziness. Crazy things like Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. Interesting mix. Yeah,
that's a weird and real thing.
Yeah, and it's a tactical, like, fighting game.
Okay.
That seems legit.
It looks really, like, the way they, like, smushed it together, like, they did a really good job of integrating, like, the worlds together, and, like, the tactics look really cool. Like, I highly suggest you, like, check this out. It's just kind of like, I didn't think that would be a thing, but it's a thing, and it works.
Video games have a weird history of that, though. Like, we've all been working the anime con scene so long that Kingdom Hearts is kind of blasé for us now.
Yeah,
but remember when that was announced?
Out,
and how terrible that idea seemed?
Yeah, that's true.
That's so true. I'm really excited for the new South Park game, The Fractured But Whole.
That's such a classy title. Yeah.
I love that. They're very proud of their new.
You know, I just finally got that.
Yeah. Yep.
How did I not get that?
But Ubisoft is very proud of their new pirate battle game called Skull and Bones, which looks really pretty. It's going to be like, it seems to be like multiplayer ships, or like you control an entire ship and you can switch from like each crew member to like do stuff on your ship.
I could be the god of the sea.
Right. It looks really cool.
Okay.
They had the new so there's this new space battle game where you play as a spaceship and you battle other spaceships, and it's called Starlink. But the cool thing is that they're doing kind of an amiibo takeoff where you get collectible toys and you can use them with the Switch controller. And the neat thing about these toys is that you can take parts off of like one toy and put parts from another toy on it, and your ship in the video game will do the same thing.
Well, that sounds cool,
right? Like, I have my red ship and I take the thrusters off and I put these big yellow thrusters on, and in the game my red ship now has big yellow thrusters. Like, it's really like, that's really cool.
This much closer to Gunpla Battle.
Right?
This much closer.
Right? Yeah. Ugh. One day. Far Cry 5 is coming. with a plot set in the middle of a cult-ridden American town.
Yeah, that's caused some controversy from some jackasses.
As soon as I saw it,
same people
just
who
like,
are upset about Wolfenstein 2, though. Really.
Well, you know, it's funny. These are the same people who will defend any portrayal of Middle Easterners as terrorists, but can't accept
All I know is like my first thought when I saw like the new Wolfenstein and the new Far Cry is just like, these games seem to be quite topical to our times right now.
You think so? Just a little bit?
A bit. Like, just, I don't know if they're really meant subtle for that, but like, that's really topical. Good job, guys. Yeah. But that wasn't the biggest surprise of Ubisoft's conference. The biggest, hugest surprise was that they announced Beyond Good and Evil 2.
That is.
That's like saying Half-Life 3.
Wow.
And this the cinematic trailer they created for it is absolutely gorgeous. I highly recommend that you find this trailer and you watch it because it is so beautiful.
Huh.
And it is like it's really gorgeous.
And, okay.
And like the creator was like crying on stage and it's just like, oh, I feel for you. I feel so happy for you that your game is like finally done or like getting done and like it's getting out and we're all really excited for you. And that was just like a really good feel good moment. It was just like, ah, oh, yes, after so long, this is coming.
Yes. That's
I almost didn't even think that was ever going to happen.
I was pretty much like, I was pretty confident it wasn't going to happen, and then it happened.
Mm.
I mean, like, I don't even, like, follow stuff, but Beyond Good and Evil 2 is, like, the kind of joke that, you know, in the year 2000, we made jokes about Duke Nukem Forever.
Mm. Yep.
Except then that finally came out and turned out not to be any good, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knows how it's going to be. I just know that it looks pretty.
Could be anything. Could be a boat.
Right? What else looked pretty was Sony's presentation, because they usually go really theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
So they opened their presentation with, like, this, like, band sitting on a rug, and there was a sitar and a violin and, like, very, like, I want to say Indian, that area, band, and there was, like, this waterfall, and it was making, like, patterns in the waterfall, and that was all because we're getting a new Uncharted game.
Oh, of course.
Uncharted The Lost Legacy.
Wow.
Right? Like,
that's intense.
Yeah. Crazy. You know what else is crazy? Monster Hunter World. Monster Hunter coming to a console. Like, that's so exciting. That's so exciting.
I mostly play Monster Hunter on my 3DS, so yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah. Like, so exciting. And they also did a VR block showcasing, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different games that are coming to VR for them. They're very excited about VR. They're very excited about that. And guess what is coming to VR? Skyrim. Ooh.
Skyrim.
Hey, which will be really cool.
Escape the Skyrim.
It'll be really cool in VR, though.
Yeah, yeah. I would play Skyrim in VR.
Right? Like, who wouldn't?
But I, of course, don't have anything like that could remotely handle VR. For God's sakes, it took me forever to get the computer to stop choking on producing this show.
Yeah.
If we could afford computers that would let us play Skyrim.
Yeah. We should just become androids, like in Detroit Become Human. Zing, zing, zing. That's a new one that's coming out. It's by the guy who did Heavy Rain.
Oh, geez.
So that'll be light fiction, is what you're saying? Very lighthearted.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Not dark at all.
Feel good game of the summer.
Yep. definitely.
A lot of bright colors, pastels, freedom of what you can do in the game.
Yep, a lot of smiles in that game. A lot of smiles also going to be in God of War 4. That was sarcasm.
Is that, that's still a thing?
That's a thing. That's a thing. He's a dad. God of War 4.
Wasn't he a dad before? And then...
Well, in this game, it's like him... Okay, I'm taking a wild guess, and, like, I'm guessing he's going, like... Because it's all, like, ice and snow, so I'm guessing he's going after the Norse gods.
Yes, he is.
So, that's interesting, but, like, he's showing his son how to, like, kill gods and stuff. So, that's kind of cool. He's got a great big bushy beard. And, yes, God of War 4, he's a dad, is coming.
I can't wait till God of War 7 when the son has to kill Kratos. And he can, and Kratos will be, why'd you do this? Where you, and then, and the son could be like, I learned it from you, Dad. I learned it from you. I just did that whole setup for a stupid joke that no one.
I sort of got it.
No, that's good. That was real good.
It wasn't good.
Also being set up, we got footage of the newest superhero video game, which is Spider-Man.
They've been teasing that game for a while.
Oh, it looked really good. It's done in the same like play style as the Arkham games, which were all like really, really good.
I still think the like, I know they're doing it to try to differentiate it from the film series, but I really think that version of the Spider-Man costume they're doing looks really goofy. Like with the big giant white spider, because it's not really like.
Well, there's probably going to be alternate costumes in the game anyway, so you can probably switch it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of it is, like, they are going for, like, a brighter, a bit more goofier, like, appearance. Mainly to differentiate, I think, from, like, the Dark Knight. And just because, like, to really reflect Spider-Man.
I don't know. Has there ever really been a dark, grim, and gritty version of Spider-Man?
Challenge accepted. I'm gonna find it.
Well, and I don't mean ones like that noir one doesn't count.
But I will say there was a little thing at the very end of the sizzle reel. Gave us a little treat of Miles Morales.
Ooh.
So yeah, he's a thing in that game. So yeah, maybe you will be able to switch between like suits or Spider-Man themselves. I'm not sure, but it was just really cool that they like were like, "Hey, here's this one. We like him too. We know you like him. Here he is." So that was really nice.
Ah, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. And while Nick looks for gritty Spider-Man,
Craven's Last Hunt and the death of John DeWolf, those were dark. Spider-Man gets buried alive in the former, and he takes revenge on a maniac with a shotgun in the latter.
And it's not that grim dark.
Oh, I guess.
It's not like it's Frank Miller dark.
I'm sure he was no Frank Miller Spider-Man. Actually,
I'm sure he was
really
still making jokes on the way down.
I'm really happy there's no Frank Miller Spider-Man. Who am I kidding?
I think,
well, while you guys are going,
I think we
down,
need to make a parody Frank Miller Spider-Man.
Guys,
what else is there again?
Make a Twitter account.
I'm gonna go up to the glorious world of Nintendo. They had a bunch of new games, a bunch of new content. For
like Skyrim?
Switch. Skyrim is coming to the Switch. That was about it. I don't think they even like showed Skyrim as part of their presentation, so.
Especially because they showed it in all the early Switch promotional materials.
Yeah, that's exactly true. And in some of the earlier presentations, so like why show it twice? Xenoblade Chronicles.
When they can show you Super Mario Odyssey five more times.
Oh, because... yeah, so Super Mario Odyssey, new Mario game, anthropomorphic hat that can take over other beings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit creepy, but we'll run with it. It looks good.
Is creepy your way of saying awesome? Because, yeah, that's...
Well, you can inhabit other human beings in New Donk City. Would you like to be, like, parasitically inhabited by Mario? That's gotta be weird.
But most importantly, what's her name's back in New Donk City? The girlfriend...
Pauline, she's the mayor.
Pauline returns to the Mario franchise.
Right? Good on you.
I'm really glad she did something with herself after that whole King Kong incident. I mean, Donkey Kong incident.
Well, and let's remember that the Donkey Kong that kidnapped her isn't the DK. It's DK's dad. Because the Donkey Kong you play in most of the games now is Donkey Kong Jr. Not to be confused with Diddy Kong, his son.
Isn't that Cranky Kong?
Cranky Kong is the Donkey Kong in the original Donkey Kong.
My God.
And there's one in between Cranky and Donkey Jr.?
No, Donkey Kong Jr. is the Donkey Kong that you play normally as DK. It's that Diddy Kong is the son of Donkey Kong Jr., who is the son of Donkey Kong, a.k.a. Cranky Kong.
Got it. Timeline established.
I like the way that entire conversation, the video just saw Nick nodding as you and I talked.
Whatever works. But yeah, there's going to be Xenoblade Chronicles 2 coming, a brand new Kirby game, which looks like it's going to be multiplayer, so that's really neat, a new Yoshi game, a new Fire Emblem game, the Breath of the Wild is getting two new DLC packs with a bunch of new amiibos.
Nice.
Rocket League, as we mentioned earlier, actually will be coming to the Switch, so that'll be really neat. And the big surprise of the whole thing, Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although I was also really excited about the Metroid 2 remake for the 3DS.
Yes.
Which I basically 100% guarantee I'm picking up, because Classic Metroid is awesome. Classic Metroid that I can carry with me in my pocket is better.
Yes. Yeah.
You can only play Zero Mission so many times.
Exactly.
But yeah, the only thing, like, I remember watching this with my boyfriend, and he was just like, what? because all they did was just show the title, and they did nothing else, absolutely nothing. And he was just gutted, and just like, you can't even show us, like, anything? No. But there will be new amiibos, and the Metroid amiibo is going to be squishy, and I'm really excited, and I want to squish it.
That's awesome and ridiculous.
I know. Awesome. I know. So... Okay. So this after the conferences streamed online, the rest of the week, if you were at E3, you could go to the booths of all the people and actually try out the games if you waited in line for 2 hours, and all sorts of fun stuff. If you'd like to know more, go ahead and check out the articles I wrote on the Nerdentai website. I have linked restreams of the conferences, so you could get the whole list of games if I didn't announce anything that you are really into. And yeah, video games.
Video games.
And most of these games are happening 2018. There's a few that are coming out this year, Most of them are slated for next year or even further.
Well, and that's, okay. You know, it's the nature of a conference like this. Actually, the interesting thing about E3 is just that it's a major trade conference that still, like, gets announcements when, like, so much of the tech industry's moved away from that. Like, you know, when's the last time you heard of, you know, like, a major tech the video game industry is the only real part of the tech industry that still, like, actually uses their conference. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, because, you know, Apple, Microsoft, all these people, like, they don't do stuff at CES or Mobile World Congress anymore. It's all, you know, kind of moved to, like, their own events. You know, Apple really was the first to do that, like, you know, when they just announced the new VR-capable iMacs that came out just recently. It's like last week or so. And, of course, all of their new AR kit. For iOS, for building augmented reality applications. And, of course, one of the things they touted as a... this is a long transition, but it's getting there. That one of the things, of course, they touted that would potentially using ARKit is one of the... probably one of the most well-known uses of AR in, you know, that... But most of our listeners probably have at least played with, gotten to play with on a device they already own, and that's, of course, Pokemon Go. And see, I got there, and mind you, you know, most of us have turned that AR camera off to save battery. Worked well enough to use as a segue. So Niantic's been actually doing a lot of announcements and been doing some updates with the first anniversary of Pokemon Go coming up in July, and they've got a couple of things happening. First and foremost, we're in the middle of the big update on the gyms. As we're recording this, they're redoing the gym system entirely. Instead of the old system where it was all CP-based for where you are in the gym and you could have 10 people in there and then either train up your team's gyms or challenge it, they're completely redoing the gym system. And earlier today, they locked down all the gyms. And as we're recording this, I'm looking at my Pokemon... And half of them have come back and half of them haven't. So, like, we are mid-update. Like, they are manually updating these. Because the ones that came back are coming back with their full health. So, out of the 8 gyms I was in, 3 of them my Pokemon still think are they're in there. They're going to be doing it where it's going to be a first-in, first-out with the Pokemon in there. It's going to be a maximum of 6. You cannot have any repeat Pokemon. So if someone's put a Vaporeon in, you can't put a Vaporeon in. But because it's also first in, first out, it's not going to be like your CP level doesn't matter for where you're going to fall in the battle. It's all about who's going into the gym. Pokemon, if they aren't fed berries by members of your team, like you could feed your own Pokemon berries. Or other people can, but they've got to go to the gym to do it. They will eventually come back if they're not fed berries, and that'll prevent kind of players who stopped playing but left a really high CP Pokemon in a gym.
Okay.
Or if you put a really high CP Pokemon in a gym once and they've been stuck there for months, like this one Vaporeon that I put in this rural gym 6 months ago that is still sitting there, and he wasn't even a good one. Like, he was one of my lower level Vaporeons. I tossed him in there thinking that he was going to come back so I could continue to train him up because I thought the gym would go back down, and he's still there.
I'd say nope.
Well, he won't be tonight, you know, when they finish kicking all of us, all the Pokemon out of all the gyms, but that's actually a really cool update that they're doing, and there's way more to that, and you can go to the Niantic's official website to get the full details on that. But the more interesting things, they're also going to be doing group raids where up to 20 players can effectively fight a boss Pokemon, and if they do within 5 minutes, a bunch of rare stuff will spawn around the players. And that is going to be rolled out over the next couple of weeks. But they've also, Niantic has announced, in celebration of the first anniversary of Pokemon Go, they're hosting Pokemon Go Fest in Chicago's Grant Park on July 22nd. And tickets are going on sale today, on the official website. I say today, but we're releasing this on the 20th. So they went on sale today on the 19th. And it's sold out. Like they put the tickets out today, like on the 19th, when we're recording this, because of course we always record it the night before we release it. They were released on the 19th and they sold out on the 19th. But no one knows really. So when they first announced this, no one really knew what it was. There were zero details. So all these people ran out and bought tickets, not really knowing what they were buying for, but it's just going to be, there's going to be a ton of Pokemon there. They're going to have a mass spawning in Grand Park. There's going to have challenges and rewards, which which they're like work together with thousands of trainers in the park and millions around the world to complete challenges throughout the day and unlock amazing in-game rewards globally. I don't know what that means. There will be an exclusive in-app medal for people who are there, which is, you know, that's not bad.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And special Pokestops. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. With the gym updates, gyms will also function as Pokestops. So if you live in an area that has a gym but no Pokestop, which is a really frustrating thing that can happen to people in smaller towns where there are some spots where it's just a gym and nothing else, it will also function as a Pokestop.
That's nice.
Yeah, but the special Pokestops, apparently, which will just be... that will award special 2K eggs, which can only be obtained in Grant Park. They're going to have separate team lounges. And then photo ops. So I'm assuming they're going to have commemorated experience by snapping photos with your favorite Pokemon at the many awesome... So I'm assuming they're going to have guys in costume. You're going to have a guy in a Pikachu costume. That's really what that means.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. So that's a thing from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. in Grant Park in Chicago. That's going to happen, and it's already sold out, so you can't go. But the whole thing is, when they announced it, it's like they really didn't tell anyone what it was. Like, I'm still like, this is the thing that people are paying to go to. And I mean, I guess a lot of people live in Chicago, but I really hope there's nothing exclusive there that really can't ever be obtained. An exclusive medal is one thing. That's fine. But, like, I hope there aren't, like, any, like, if a legendary were to show up there, I would be really kind of irritated. Because this isn't, like, you know, like, I know that, like, in the original Pokemon, like, Mew was released as, like, at certain events. But, you know, you could trade Pokemon with the original Pokemon. So, like... enough people went to those things, then, like, things got traded around to other people. But you can't trade in Pokemon Go because of the chances of hacking are so high that they've been,
right.
You know, they want to do that, but they've been avoiding it. Also, they're going to be doing, there's a Pikachu event in Yokohama this August in Japan. And they have another company that's going to be doing, like, events across Europe that are separate from this. I think the most important thing is just that the gyms are going to be cool again. Because, like, gyms were fine for players like me who are kind of power players where, like, I mean, I wouldn't even call myself a power player because, like, in the region I've been playing for this whole game, I'm really kind of a mid-level player. Like, I've got serious Pokemon, but there are real serious players out there. And I think this is the only way to make it so players who aren't, like, really as intensely into it can, like, be competitive.
I would like that.
And I think that's really cool. I'm really excited about it. Yeah, so Pokemon Go is still relevant, man. I swear. Well, I'm sure that someone's gonna go, people are still playing Pokemon Go, because that always happens for someone. I'm like, yes, a lot of us.
Yeah.
Just it's not true. Like, is it gonna ever be at the peak at the beginning? No. No game is like that. Look at the bell curve of any multiplayer game. Like, with there are only a few rare exceptions where, like, it stays high and then gets bigger. It's
what are you talking hype. About? People are still... There's more people playing Lineage 2 than there have been. Can't say that with a straight.
But it's, you know, it's with any game. You know, it's the it spikes right away at the beginning, and then the people who are really into it stay with it. Especially mm-hmm. with a game that's free to play. Like, you're going to get mm-hmm. a lot of drive-bys.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay. Hey, Nick, why don't you talk about something else entirely different with no segue right. really prepared?
There's not really anything, any really good segue for this one. So, as we've talked about previously, Sony is still going forward with their Spider-Man universe movies because everyone wants in on that sweet cinematic universe money. So they're doing Venom with Tom Hardy, and then they're doing the Black Cat Silver Sable movie because...
yeah, because reasons.
Because, anyway, at a recent press conference, a representative from Sony said, oh, yeah.
Well, Amy Pascal, Venom, like, head of their movie stuff.
Oh, excuse me, yes. Amy Pascal said, oh, yeah, Venom and the... Black and Silver movies are totally part of the same cinematic universe as Spider-Man.
I believe the word she used was adjunct.
Okay, yeah. There's still, if you look at the video from that, though, the look on Kevin Feige's from Marvel's face when she said that is this kind of look of sheer terror.
Well, okay, let's go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot. To give context for those who haven't seen the clip or don't really know, it's Amy Pascal and Kevin Feige are sitting next to each other, being talked about Spider-Man, and they got asked about the Tom Hardy Venom movie, and she stated that there's potential that Tom Holland Spider-Man could show up in those movies, and that they are adjuncts to the Spider-Man, like they're part of a Spider-Man continuity they're building. Now, and then Kevin Feige's his expression could be interpreted one of two ways. Either it was news to him, or he was thinking slyly. But it's especially confusing though because Kevin Feige has repeatedly stated now that the Venom movie will not be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is happening is that the Venom movie and the Silver and Black, which Silver and Black actually would work fine without Spider-Man involved at all. So, but I think that what they're saying is that these films will exist compatibly with Spider-Man Homecoming, and that Spider-Man exists in the continuity of these films, but they aren't ever going to be. I think really what the thing is that what I think is happening here is that Sony's going to make these compatible with Spider-Man Homecoming, and that Spider-Man that Tom Holland Spider-Man can show up, but they will never reference the rest of the MCU, and the rest of the MCU will never reference these characters.
I have two thoughts about this.
First thought is that it still kind of makes it part of the MCU. It just may end up being an apocryphal corner. It's like when you read a Star Trek novel.
Mm.
All the stuff from the Star Trek TV series takes place in the universe of that Star Trek novel, but that Star Trek novel isn't part of the official continuity.
Right.
That's kind of the main way I'm thinking about this. So I'm kind of okay with it that way. Like, whatever.
I just think it sounds like a mess. I think it's dumb that they even are still trying to do the cinematic universe thing.
Sony's got a lot of money around. But here's the other thing. So the Netflix shows are part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
They reference the Avengers all the time. Now, I understand that the TV series have all been taking place prior to Age of Ultron. Like, the reason why the later stuff is because if you look at the time, the Defenders timeline, they're still much earlier in the timeline than the rest of the MCU.
Right.
But you'll notice that none of those characters are ever getting referenced in any other MCU works, be it on even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which references everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we still have no problem accepting those characters as part of the MCU. And it's because the television division is very separate from the film division now, where they didn't used to be. When they started this plan, mm-hmm. they were all one thing, and then they splintered. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has worked very hard to try to keep itself connected to the films, but the Defenders series don't really have any need to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like their whole thing is how the movies have affected New York, and then they're in New York, and that's all they care about for the most part.
Right.
So I think that, like, I think it'll be fine. It'll be just as connected to the rest of the MCU as the Netflix shows.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. I'm just kind of, for me, I'm just kind of shaking my head, and I'm just like, I just don't understand the whole trying to build out a Spider-Man cinematic universe.
Well, I think the more important thing in that interview with Amy Pascal, like, if the more important thing in that clip is that I don't think she understands why the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been successful at all.
No one understands why the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been successful at all.
But I do. So the reason why it's been successful...
I'm saying that no studios do. Because they keep wanting to get on the movie bandwagon, but they don't want to do the work for it.
Kevin Feige knows why. However I'm supposed to pronounce his name. He knows why. And it's because, this is the reason why it's been successful, is because even though, like, she's like, there's many chapters in the book, and so fans feel like they need to see the next one in the series, and, like, that's what Amy Pascal is saying. But really, the reason why the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been successful is because you don't need to see all of them, because you can just jump on and see some of them. And yes, you do get a better experience, I think, if you watch all of them. But mm-hmm. if you were just watching the movies with Captain America in them, like, skipped the Iron Man movies and only saw him in Avengers movies and Civil War, or if you were watching the Thor, if you were just following a character,
mm-hmm.
like, people could go and watch, people who watched Doctor Strange didn't need to see the earlier films at all. You could, and there's some stuff in there that's maybe a little, nicer, but if you didn't, you would have still probably enjoyed that movie just as much.
Not unlike the way I read the comics, actually, where I follow the characters I like and I don't really pay attention to the...
The whole reason why the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been successful is that they followed what the comics get right, is that you follow the characters you like, and then when you get to the big crossover event... maybe you fill out on the other characters, or maybe you just watch the crossover event and let the context of the story tell you what you need to know about those other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's...
Yeah, everyone wants in on this, on these Cinematic Universe dollars, though, and they don't... It's also the same thing I've been hearing people say about the Tom Cruise Mummy movie. It's... They want in on the cinematic universe thing, but they focus on the world building and the setup for the next movie and make that the main focus, unlike the Marvel movies where that's background set dressing.
Yeah.
Because the foreground thing is the movie itself, which is perfectly fine on its own.
The Mummy,
and then the world building is the background.
Have you seen The Mummy yet?
I haven't.
I have.
I've heard it's I've heard it's physically painful to watch.
It's not physically painful. It's okay, so the problem with the movie is just that it's not anything. It's like, it's not bad. It's just not good. Like, you're never scared.
Mm-hmm.
In a mummy, which is fine, because, if it was just not scary, the Brendan Fraser Mummy films, which there are two good ones... those two good ones weren't scary, but they were adventures, and so their action, clearly they're going for an action angle with the Tom Cruise movie because you cast Tom Cruise. But so the Mummy's never scary, but the action isn't really compelling enough. Like, I love a good Tom Cruise action film. I I go out and see the Mission Impossible movies and watch him hang off a plane, and that's fun. Because he's freaking crazy. But you never really... Well, but the problem is that Tom Cruise never really acts like he's scared.
Mm-hmm.
But he's bad at acting scared in general. Like, in a Mission Impossible movie, that's fine. He's playing Ethan Hunt, and he's, you know, highly trained secret agent. And, yeah, he's supposed to be, like, a highly trained government scout or whatever. Like, he's military guy in the movies, in this Mummy movie. But, you know, that doesn't really prepare you for Undead Woman, you know? I honest to God think that this is my analysis, is that if they had made this exact movie, only switched the parts that Tom Cruise and Jake Johnson were playing, it would have been amazing. Because, like, don't even change the script. Like, literally, just put a comedic actor in that part and put the serious guy as, like, the buddy who's barely in it. And I think that bait and switch would have been great. But, I mean, it's Alex Kurtzman made a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens. But the bad news is the Mummy's doing really well internationally. Like, it's been huge. It's been making a, like, it kind of flopped hard in the U.S., but it, like, blew up overseas. So,
you're telling me I might be stuck with the Dark Universe?
Well, it's their third try to, it's their third attempt to launch the shared movie universe, with Dracula Untold was supposed to be part of it, and then it flopped so hard they went, we're kidding. And then the werewolf movie they made, I don't remember what it was called, and that's how well it did that I don't remember what it's called. And that also, like, those two were supposed to both be starts of this shared cinematic universe. And so this time, like, they even put the Dark Universe graphic on in front of the movie. Like, they're, like, so proud of, like... And I gotta say, that Dark Universe name is really inconvenient, because that's the working title of the Justice League Dark movie. And so those of us who run blogs where we have to tag things, and we're already using the Dark Universe tag... our tag for Dark Universe on Nerd and Tie is Universal's Dark Universe, because screw you guys. I think actually I think DC is contemplating legal action.
Is this episode just, like, riddled with bad names of things?
Everything is poorly named.
Like, come on. And also, speaking of, like, movies that didn't really do well here but are doing, like, did well elsewhere, it's kind of weird that, like, the movies that we, I don't know, like, the movies that, like, flopped here seem to do really well overseas. For example, the Warcraft movie.
Yeah, that was another weird one.
But there are situations.
It didn't do well here, but in China, it's doing, like, crazy good.
Yeah, it did crazy well in China. But, I mean, also, right? that works more in one direction, though. Because Pacific Rim, which is an amazing film, that was Nerd and Tie's pick of Best Movie of the Year when it came out. That was 2013?
Mm-hmm.
That was our first, like, when we did our first year in review, like, Best of the Year show, that was unanimously... are, like, and one of the few times where we had a unanimous decision for Best Movie of the Year. But that didn't do well in the U.S., but it did well in China, which is why we're getting that sequel with John Boyega. I think it's a matter of, well, what you have to remember is that a lot of these movies now, like, especially China's the big influence on worldwide grosses. Well, I mean, the Mummy's got this Tom Cruise factor, where Tom Cruise is still a big name overseas. Like, Tom Cruise's name is really what's selling tickets to the Mummy. But, like, with Warcraft, like, Independence Day 2 did well in China. It didn't do well enough to save the franchise, but, like, we have to remember is that a lot of the stuff that feels rehashed or cliched, a lot of the things that came before it, the things that these are rehashes of, weren't released in China initially.
Right.
So that's a big deal. And, you know, frankly, I mean, Transformers 5 comes out. between this episode and our next one. And the Transformers, the Transformers franchise is one of the highest grossing franchises of all time. And it's five movies. And it is made, like, it's in the same ballpark as, like, Star Wars per film at this point. And...
But like, in the words of Lindsay Ellis, formerly in the Nostalgia Chick, the Transformers movies are so weird because they're some of the highest grossing movies in box office history, and yet people don't generally seem to like them.
Oh,
which
so you
most
watched that
other
video
high
too.
Grossing movies can say.
Well, I think there are people who like them, but they just don't remember them.
I
really liked the first one.
So did I.
And I enjoyed about half of the second one.
Don't remember.
Well, no one can remember the third one.
I can remember the third one because it was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
No, the fourth one's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
I haven't seen the fourth one because I saw the third one and I'm like, well, I'm never doing this again.
I saw half of the fourth one and I left. The third one, I honestly can't tell you anything about what happened in it besides the fact that they shot some scenes at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and it's really obviously the Milwaukee Art Museum, and it pulled me out of the movie completely because it's like the landmark they play on the morning news, like the shot of the...
I remember you saying that.
I remember the third one really well because I remember sad homeless Megatron. I remember him in his poncho.
I remember that visual, but I don't remember why it happened.
I remember him yelling at zebras. I remember him blowing up the Abe Lincoln statue so he can have somewhere to sit down. I remember him thanklessly helping Optimus Prime fight only to get his spine ripped out.
I don't remember that.
That happened.
You happened. But the first one's good.
Yeah, the first one is good. I agree.
But, it's, you know, it's not the worst movies. They're not the worst movies that Michael Bay's ever made. That'd be Pain and Gain. Pain and Gain is the worst 6 hours of my life.
Yeah, wait a minute.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Have you ever... It's just like Cat Soup is the longest 2 hours of my life, even though it's a 30-minute anime.
Gotcha.
Because it's so slow and painful that it... Simple joke.
No, I don't know what...
Pain and Gain. Pain and Gain is a movie starring Mark Wahlberg and The Rock and a bunch of people who are really talented, and it is wholly unwatchable. Because it's Michael Bay's attempt to make his personal movie. It's also a black comedy, only it's based off of real events. And when your main character is horrifically bludgeoning someone to death by hitting him in the head with a weight, it's hard to like them still. And it's even harder, like, it's not... You can do black comedy where you've got a horrible main character or characters who do bad things. But, you can't shoot it like a Michael Bay movie.
That's just generally good advice for any movie, though.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh. It tanked. You know, speaking of things that financially made no sense and are doing poorly.
Nice.
Let's talk about Wizard World.
Oh, man.
Wizard World's money problems are continuing. We've talked about this in the past. That Wizard World, overexpanded, started losing money. Well, unfortunately, things aren't... They're still not going great for the company. Even after having scaled back operations to fewer conventions and securing outside funding from Bristol Investment Fund, whose owner sits on the board of Wizard World, the company still managed to lose over $1.28 million in the first quarter of 2017.
Chimney, man.
Revenue per Wizard World show is down $99,000. Like, just under $100,000 per show from 2016. And with the con markets continue, getting crowded, This is not going well. So what it means is they're making less money per show, which means their margin is dropping per show in a market where more and more people are launching. You know, they're competing with Reed Pop. They're competing with what's the name of the Left Field Media. Left Field Media, which spun off from a bunch of people who used to work for Reed Pop. So Left Field Media and Reed Pop are both doing all these big events also. And along with local Comic-Con starting, even more and more people trying to jump onto the big box con wagon, Wizard World overflowed the market. And now, you know, it's just going downhill fast. As the bigger and bigger stars of the conventions, the smaller and smaller the margins. And if less people go to the shows, they're making less and less money per show. And they are just hemorrhaging money. They are just hemorrhaging money. Like, I don't believe that I have managed to go through, we've been checking in on their financials every once in a while, and it's just been not, is Wizard World making money? It is, how much are they losing? And it's always starts with something million.
Jeez. I can't say I'm surprised.
No, I was going to say the exact same thing. Not surprised at all.
Yeah. No, it's...
The market's super saturated right now.
Here's the thing. When Wizard World started with Wizard World Chicago, which is still their biggest con, in the Midwest, last I checked. It brings in huge numbers. But here's the thing. It used to be a big deal if you went to a con and you saw, you know, X star of the show, because there weren't a lot of conventions in a lot of the regions of the country which would have these people. So, if Jim Bob, star of Super Dude on the CW, was coming to your town, you'd spend a lot of money. But if it's the third year that you've seen a cast member from one of your favorite shows in a row, it stops being special. It stops being a draw. And honestly, it also used to only cost $20-$30 to get an autograph, or those prices keep going up. You're looking at $50-$75 for an autograph of some of these people who 5-6 years ago you would have spent, half of that. So it's really...
And it's in addition to how much it is to get into the place in the first place.
Yeah, no, and those prices have been going up as well. And so the problem is that... And also then shows find, people competing with Wizard World feel more pressure to bring in bigger names, which, of course, will tank a small show that doesn't know what it's doing. But it also means that those shows bring down the perceived value of the Wizard World event, because the thing that Wizard is bringing is no longer, and the exception is the more common thing. And it's just not sustainable, because those big name guests cost a lot of money. They cost a lot of money to bring in, and it's hugely massive on the bottom line. And it's long term. We're going to see the conventions that I know that are doing well are the ones who focus either on more niche or very limited in any of their, they're very limited in who they bring in for guests. It's the big box guest based cons. These autograph cons are they're far too oversaturated, and there's just going to be a collapse. There's going to be a collapse.
Well, yeah, because it can't... It had to hit a... We had to hit a ceiling at some point, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not much else to say.
Yeah.
Oofta.
Oofta, indeed.
I mean, it's just sad,
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I agree.
Well, because this is the problem, is what's going to happen is that they're going to take out everything in their wake. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what's going to happen is that there's going to be, with this oversaturation, people are going to see it as less special, but that's going to spool down, because what's going to happen is there's going to be a collapse, and then these cons won't exist in the region. So they're oversaturated. We're going to see a bubble burst with it long term, I think. I mean, and maybe I'm wrong.
It's already happening.
But honestly, what I mean is that I think we're going to see I think we're seeing the beginning of a bubble bursting. I think that in 5 years, this entire, like, I think you're going to see at least half the market disappear within the next 5 years. Not just including Wizard World.
Oh no, I agree. I think you're right. That scares me.
Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot that we can do about it. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is one thing we can do. Let's do the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Let's do the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
You may be asking yourself at home why we're not doing a mailbag segment this episode, and the reason why is that none of you wrote
in. Not one of you wrote to us.
Technically, a couple people did, but nothing that they wanted to have read on air. And so, yeah, no, nobody wrote in a letter that they wanted read on air this episode. So, we're
you
just going to
at least write us once in a while.
I mean, geez.
Ingrates.
Arkhamize, what were you doing? What
Come
were you
on,
doing,
Arkhamize?
Anyways, we do have the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, though. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read part of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book it is. If you guess correctly, you get included in our Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, we read your name aloud every episode in this segment. Two, we get, list your name on the website. Three, nothing else, but I always need to put a third thing in a list because that's what all the rhetorical stuff I was taught tells me to do. Now, we've been reading from the same book for a while, and someone got it. Someone got it. So there's a new name of the Hall of Awesome. We're adding Sakura Sunset to the Hall of Awesome.
Woo!
Who guessed correctly that I was reading Orson Scott Card's Children of the Mind. She joins the following people who are also in the Hall of Awesome of Arkhamai Zero, Rin and Senti, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Band, Core Fan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Source, Paper Godzilla, Kevsy, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, and Keith Shizuo. Forgot to take a breath ahead of time. So I'll be adding your name to the website this week. Now because she guessed, I have to pull up another book, which I will be reading an ebook version because my entire library is 500 miles away from me. But that's what the internet is for, man. And the line from the book, from the new book, if you're going to start right now, is hungry sharks came about the vessel often when she neared islands or coral reefs. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandted.com/contact and go on the little form and tell us. Or if you'd like to tell us anything else, go to that form, write us a thing, and we would have read it in the mailbag section that we normally have on the episode. Or alternatively, if you don't feel like writing it down and you just want to say it aloud yourself, you can call our voicemail number at area code 414-375-0480 and leave us a message.
You should really do that. We like hearing your voices.
Talk at us.
But
I want to hear your voice. You specifically.
Okay, Nick.
You know who I'm talking to.
Clearly, you're talking to yourself.
Oh. I mean, you're not wrong.
Oh boy, we should probably call it a show at this point.
Yeah,
then.
let's do this before I start crying again. All right. As always. From the Nerdadome, where we record Nerd and Ty, because we're definitely all in one place. I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm Gen Proc.
And remember, you can subscribe to Nerd and Ty on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on Stitcher. You can subscribe to us on the Google Play Store. And you can subscribe to this show on YouTube at youtube.com/TRAEGORN. You can also follow Nick Izumi's videos, which at youtube.com/Nick Izumi. You can also remember to follow us on Twitter, where we're Nerd and Ty. Follow us on Tumblr, where we're Nerd and Ty. Follow us on Facebook, where we're Nerd and Ty. For God's sakes, man, it's not hard. And, you know, it's the same thing everywhere. And remember, on iTunes and on Stitcher, you should rate and review us. And same with Google Play Store. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. And remember, you can sponsor an episode for just $20. And we would say something nice about you at the top of the hour. So, you know.
Be like Ohio Kimono.
Ohio Kimono did it. Why not you?
And as always, keep on Spockin' in the free world.
And in your mind, in your hearts, in the places that you dare dream, enjoy your internal dance party.